I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Labor Day is creeping up, but that doesn't mean the end of the growing season. Horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark is here today. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning.
Well, frost generally doesn't happen until October, but with this weird summer we've had, who knows what's going to happen?
It's been a different kind of growing season this year. We seem to be stuck in this relatively cool weather pattern. I mean, frankly, temperatures in the 70s are great for me, but, you know, if you're looking for the usual August warmth and stuff like that, it does not seem to be happening this year. I've had a lot of people complain their tomatoes just are not ripening. Mm-hmm. And of course, ripening tomatoes is a function of temperature. The warmer right. it is, the faster they ripen. I've been getting a lot, but then I planted 28 plants. So it's
I only planted five, and a little bit later, but I have been getting some. If you remember, I was doing an experiment. I got the little ones, I can't think of the name of them now, the yellow ones.
Sun Gold.
Thank you, Sun Gold. And then the other, I got a Sun Green, which I'd never heard of before.
Oh, I've never heard of that either.
And I will tell you, the Sun Gold, hands down.
Yeah.
The green ones, it's hard to tell when they're ripe.
Yes.
They're a little bit bigger, and I don't think they're as sweet as the Sun Gold.
Yeah.
And the Sun Gold has been unbelievable. I can't keep up with the tomatoes.
I'm growing two different green, quote-unquote, tomatoes. Aunt Ruby's Green German. And one called Cherokee Green. I've grown Cherokee Purple. I've grown Cherokee Brown. And you're correct. I never know quite when to harvest them. But the flavor of the Cherokee Green is
good.
Fantastic. Mm. And it's an absolutely beautiful lime green color when you slice it. Big, meaty tomato. I'm happy with that. Aunt Ruby's Green German,
not so much.
Not so much, you know. But that's one of the reasons I love to grow so many different varieties, particularly new ones to me, is I get to sample different things and decide which is my favorite.
Yeah.
And every year there's new favorites, of course.
Of course, yeah. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you have comments or questions this morning for us. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So that also explains why the basil isn't as big as it usually, because that's another one that likes warmer temperatures.
There is that, but there's one other problem on basil this year, and it's a fungus, of course, called downy mildew. We had a problem with downy mildew of impatiens for a number of years, and people basically gave up growing the regular impatiens. This year we have downy mildew of basil. I noticed mine fairly early in the season just weren't looking thrifty. The leaves yellowed. They had little black spots on the underside of the leaf. They got brown spots on them. And I thought, oh, one day I turned on the water, there was water in the hose, and it came out really, really hot.
Uh-oh.
And I thought I burned them. I says, well, they'll grow out of it. Well, they never grew out of it. And when new growth came out, it would look good for about a week. And then, so I finally did some looking around, and indeed, it's downy mildew of basil, and almost everybody's basil has it this year.
I'm
jealous.
Yeah. But they're not, usually the plants get really large. I planted quite a few, but they're on the smaller side. The leaves are nice, but they're small.
Well, they like the warm weather, and that's, it's, as I said, I like the 70s. I think that's quite comfortable. I can work outside and not die of heat. The humidity has not been particularly horrible this year, but my basil is a disappointment. Mm-hmm. I actually had to buy basil.
Oh no,
at the grocery store. It's like, oh dear.
And of course, the water. We have not had the rain that we usually have.
We are in a relatively moderate drought situation. It seems like lately we've started to get a little more regular rainfall, but since the beginning of May, good drenching rains have all been off Cape.
Mm-hmm.
I watch radar and it just
slides
right to the west, right past the canal. Born in parts of Sandwich have gotten more rain than the rest of the Cape. Or it goes south and I see it's raining on the vineyard, but you know, not in Marston's Mills.
Really, yeah. Instead of that black rain cloud over us, we've got a non-rain cloud.
You know, I keep a rain gauge in my garden so I can measure what we're getting, and it's inadequate. Really is inadequate.
Sandra is giving us a call from Harwich. Good morning, Sandra.
Good morning, Mindy. Yes, my question is about planting garlic. What what pH of the soil and when to plant it, and any other advice that she can give.
Sure. A garlic's a great crop. I've been growing it for years, and there's nothing like fresh garlic. It's got an entirely different flavor. I mean, it's still garlic, but it's just so much pungent and
better.
It is better. The best time to plant it is sometime in October, late enough that you're not going to get a lot of top growth, but you know, soon enough that the soils are warm and you will get root growth. And then you would be harvesting it next July. So that is the best time. There are a number of different varieties. Don't buy garlic at the grocery store and plant it. Check out your favorite garden center and see if they're carrying it. If not, you can get it easily online. There is a great seed catalog company out of the Pacific Northwest called Territorial Seed, and they have so many different types of garlic, hardneck, softneck, you know, pungent, mild. It's lots of fun.
But and what about the pH?
Oh, the pH. As with most vegetables, you know, somewhere between 6 and 7 is just fine. And you can easily get your garden soil checked at the Extension Service in Barnstable.
Yeah. Is that a crop you need to move around? You know, like if she plants the garlic in one spot one year, do you need to plant it in another spot next year?
I do that with all my vegetables. Mm-hmm. It's a good idea not... They call it plant crop rotation, which makes you think of, you know, the Midwest and fields of corn and soybeans. But you can do it in your own garden simply by moving in a regular pattern things in different areas about every 3 years. You know, keep mm-hmm. things from the same area for about three years.
Right. Sandra, thanks for the call. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And of course, you can't do that with things like asparagus. They come up in the same spot.
That's asparagus, rhubarb, horseradish, most of your herbs. They're generally in the same spot. So I have a bed in my yard that's dedicated to the asparagus. Mm-hmm. And I have some perennial herbs in the one end of that bed as well. And I just don't expect to grow other vegetables there.
Yeah. Well, this, you know, has been, as we were saying, kind of an unusual summer with a lack of rain and different temperatures, but it has been a great year for cucumbers. I usually, yes. You know, I usually get a few. I have gotten so many cucumbers and squash.
I am. People start running when they see me coming with squash in my hands these days. It's just, I plant a wonderful variety called Cavilli, and it's a wonderful sort of grayish colored Lebanese type summer squash that is self-fruitful. So if you have bad conditions for pollination and you're not getting squash on your other plants, you will always get squash on Cavilli. And it has a great nutty flavor. It's a lovely little squash. But this year, conditions for squash have been great. So I have lots of Cavilli, and then I have my Italian green zucchini, and then I'm growing this bicolor called Zephyr. And they're all producing, and I'm just giving tons of squash away. And cucumbers, my lord, I've made pickles several times. I eat a cucumber every day.
Love them, yeah.
I'm giving them away. It's just, I need to not grow as many.
We can't help ourselves, can we?
Well, no, it is a bit of an obsession.
It's interesting, too, because the other thing that's gone completely crazy is my nasturtium. Usually, you know, it grows a little bit. It has, like, completely covered my herb garden. I can't believe how they
look absolutely beautiful. And the flowers are wonderful.
You can eat
salads.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice little
peppery. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Amy says, my vigorous cucumber plants have all died. I was diligent about watering them, and they went from having plenty of flowers to wilted and dying within a day or two. Is there a pest that might have caused damage down at the stem?
Yes, there is. It's called the striped cucumber beetle, and it's a little beetle, not something that you really notice. The adults feed on the foliage, but they also feed on the stems, and in doing so, some of them are carriers of a bacteria that they transmit into the vascular system of the cucumbers. It's called bacterial wilt, and the plants will wilt and die within a matter of days. Mm. Right now, there's also a lot of powdery mildew. My zucchini plants at the community garden plot are starting to go by. And most of it is because there's a lot of powdery mildew. My plants at home, knock on wood, still look really good.
Yeah, and then the other thing, my tomatoes actually, usually, you know, I spray them for the fungus mm-hmm. stuff. I have done nothing to them. Mm-hmm. They look great. But you're finding on your tomatoes was anthracnose?
Anthracnose, yeah. I mean, every year, I usually spray my tomatoes on a weekly basis with actinivate or one of the organic fungicides. I don't use Serenade. I find I don't get as good results with Serenade. But, you know, I always get a little bit of disease problems, but nothing that really impacts the plants as a whole. I did no spraying this year, and my tomatoes, both at home and at the community garden, have a different fungus, not early blight, not late blight, not Septoria. It's anthracnose. And the real problem with this is, yes, it infects the leaves and they turn brown and die, but it also infects the fruit. And so if you're harvesting your tomatoes and they're little like dimples on the fruit and you leave it on the shelf for a day or two, it rots quickly.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of that.
I've had that before. And it's so frustrating.
It's very frustrating.
You pick it thinking it's okay and then you look. But you can still eat it. Just cut off.
Cut
those,
it off. Yeah.
And it won't hurt. It just doesn't look as nice.
Next year, I'm definitely going to go back to a regular fungicide application.
All right. So Nan in Brewster says, love the garden show. In the spring, I emailed about our resident bunny eating our shrub roses. We transplanted them in a large water trough sea enclosed. They never looked better. When the weather gets colder, is there anything special we should do since they are in this container now?
Well, the least hardy part of any plant is the root system. And when trees and shrubs and roses and things like this, perennial plants, are planted above ground in containers, they're less insulated than if they're planted in the ground. So if you have space in your vegetable garden, you might take them out of the containers and just heal them in the garden for the winter and mulch them well, and then in spring dig them back up and put them back in your containers, and that should do the trick. Or take the containers and group them all together and mulch them heavily, just so there's some added insulation around the root system.
Could you also maybe do some burlap or something around and then put the mulch?
You could do like a little wire fencing and cover it with burlap and stuff it with leaves. I know people do that with their figs,
sure.
and it seems to work very well.
866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. More after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. I think I mentioned before, this is the first time I planted potatoes.
Oh.
And I'm not quite sure when you harvest them. When the leaves start to turn yellow, is that it?
I generally wait for the tops to completely die before I dig them up. Mine, I had massive problems with Colorado potato beetles at the community garden this year, which is where I grow my potatoes. So I'm not sure what kind of crop I'm going to get. But the leaves still look good, what leaves are left. So I'm going to wait. Usually sometime in September, they all turn brown and die back.
I did an experiment and pulled up one that looked like it was dying back. It wasn't all the way. And they were really small, so I guess I'm digging them a little too soon.
Are yours in the ground?
They're in the ground.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I've grown them in the past in these fabric, bags.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
Uh-huh.
It's like a landscape fabric bag. And I enjoyed doing that. I don't think I got as big a crop as when I do them in the ground, but it sure took up less space.
Yeah.
And so if people don't think they have enough room for potatoes next year, they might look into these fabric bags.
That's a good idea.
Most garden centers carry them.
Yeah. All right. Joel is calling from Brewster. Hey, Joel.
Hi. I'm sure this is not the right season, but Roberta just mentioned figs. I was wondering, is there a real quick answer to how does one obtain scions, if that's the right word, for fig trees and get them started?
You want to try and root them yourself?
Yes.
The easiest way is if you know someone who has a fig, to see if they would let you take some cuttings. But the best time to do that is in spring, and using some rooting powder. You know, you can dip the cut in the rooting powder and pot them up. And they root fairly readily. You can also, there's a great gentleman at City Farm Nursery or City Floral Nursery. It's in Roslindale. He's Italian, and he carries 12 different varieties of Italian figs, and he grows them from cuttings and from grafting. And if you could contact him, he's happy to speak to folks on the phone about figs. He might be able to give you some great information.
Okay. All right, Joel, thanks for the call. Sandy is calling from South Wellfleet. Good morning, Sandy.
Yes, good morning. I have about 6 plants of Italian Calabrese peppers. They're hot peppers.
Ooh.
And they look beautiful. They're little round green peppers, and they're supposed to turn red. And I'm thinking in this weather, they're not going to be turning very red. Any hints of what I can do to help that along?
Yeah, peppers, like tomatoes, are the real warm-loving crops, and I've got lots of green peppers. Mm-hmm. I grow one called Corni di Toro, bull's horn. It's an Italian, and it's a red pepper, and I'm picking them green just because I can't wait. But, you know, the longer you leave them on the plant, they will eventually turn red. But if you want to use them, just go ahead. They still taste good.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks, Sandy, for the phone call. 866-999-4626 for your garden questions. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. You know, we've talked about this, the impatience, the...
Downy mildew,
thank you. And it stays in the ground.
Yes,
so,
it does.
So we've been, as people who listen regularly know, we've been saying don't plant there, mm-hmm. because it's probably just going to kill your impatience again, and it's not a good thing. But I, this year, tried vinca,
mm-hmm.
and it has a similar look, and it fills in like that, and it really has done really well.
That's one of the plants that many of the garden centers are now recommending as a mm-hmm. substitute for the regular impatiens, although I saw a planting of regular impatiens this year that looked fabulous. Mm. Now, it's been about 3 or 4 years since the sort of initial big infection. A lot of it has to do with weather conditions as well, so it's possible that you might be able to grow some again. I would, you know, C.L. Fanari had a little challenge this year. She said, you know, just grow 4 plants.
Mm-hmm. See what happens.
And see what happens, you know. And so I would urge people to try that, because I know people love that plant.
Right. And you can do it in window boxes.
With fresh soil.
Because you change the dirt. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So this is a really good time of year to sort of survey your garden, think about what might need to be divided, and also what you might want to move around, because we're always moving things around.
Well, you know, a garden is never done. There's always something new to put in. There's always plants that suddenly need dividing, or something might have changed in your landscape that makes what you have need to be changed. So I'm actually walking around my yard now with a notebook and writing down my thoughts, because otherwise I forget what I was going to do. But I have a fence in my front yard now, and it just totally changed the whole look of the garden. And it now needs some major work.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at what shrubs need to be moved, what perennials need to be divided and moved and replanted. I'm just writing it down right now, but within the next couple of weeks, I'm going to get started. Fall is actually a great time for garden renovation. Your soil is warm. We usually get into more reliable rainfall. The working conditions are good. You might want to wear long sleeves instead mm-hmm. of a t-shirt and shorts, but Yeah, dig up your hostas. I have many that are huge, and I can get probably four or five plants out of one at this point. And since I took down the Leyland cypress and now have all this bare area to plant, we're going to see a lot of hosta division. But yeah, if you have Shasta daisies that have sort of petered out in the middle, or Siberian iris with they're nice around the edge, but the center's dead, dig them up and divide them and replant them. This is a great time to do that.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, you put the perennial gardens in and you think, oh, I'm not really going to have to do anything, but the most work. But I had a hard time pulling flower. You know, you have to, though. You have to kind of keep it contained, or it just gets, and my yard just got a little too wild. So the last couple of years I've been sort of, okay, this is where the phlox is going to stay. Yeah. Anything beyond this, I'm going to pull it up.
It's, you know, many of our plants are very, very generous in their offspring. And so I have phlox coming up everywhere. And you don't need to save every single seedling that comes up. Right. I used to do that. But now, same as you, I'm starting to get a little more ruthless. It's like, no, you're not going to grow here. They don't go to waste. They go to the compost. So, you know, but it's, yes, I have so many plants that seed themselves. I have a hard enough time with the weeds.
Right.
You know, and when suddenly your perennials become weeds, then
that's
it's
a
time
problem.
To pull them out.
All right. So he writes, a wild hailstorm destroyed my beans, squash, and basil. Is there anything I can do in the future to protect them?
Unfortunately, that is an act of nature over which we have no control. The hail missed Marston's Mills, where I live. In fact, that whole storm, I watched it on radar. It sort of skimmed along the top of the bay and then came in and from Hyannis down through Dennis, Harwich, Brewster, and Chatham. They all got hit with some really gusty wind and heavy rain and hail. There's no real way. I mean, if you know it's coming, which most of the time you don't, I suppose you could run outside and with an old sheet or something cover up your plants. But most of the time, no.
Yeah.
But it's not too late for a lot of fall planting now in the vegetable garden.
Yeah.
So
lettuce,
spinach. Mm-hmm. Plant spinach now. You'll be picking it in October. If you leave some of it, it will go dormant over the winter, and you'll be picking it again in April. So that's a great, great crop.
Yeah. You know, I did that a couple years ago, and I was shocked how much spinach I had
in the spring.
In the spring,
yeah.
So pretty much anything that does well in the cooler temperatures.
That's right. I usually plant at this time of year escarole, the bulbing fennel. You can lettuce, as you mentioned. It's getting a little late for beans. If you want a second crop of beans, usually they go in sometime in late July, early August. But yeah, anything that matures in like 50 to 60 days, put it in the ground. Beets and carrots.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking there was two or three years ago in October on Columbus Day. We were sitting on the beach like a summer day.
I remember
actually
that.
Going in the water. I mean, that was an unusual fall. Yeah. You never know.
On the Cape, usually our fall seasons are wonderful. The ground doesn't even begin to freeze until sometime in early December. First frost. When I lived in West Yarmouth, I was very close to the water. We didn't get a frost till November. Now I'm in Marston's Mills and I'm more surrounded by land. I'm not close to water. And I get my first frost mid to late October.
Mm-hmm. And I'm always so jealous when, you know, you go out to Provincetown or here in Woods Hole after all of my flowers have died and the window boxes
look
beautiful.
Great. Well, the funny thing I noticed this year, I was bemoaning the loss of our beautiful hydrangeas, but if you drove through Dennis, near the water or in Provincetown, anywhere that was really close to the water, the hydrangeas looked beautiful. You know, their flower buds weren't as badly hit as mine were.
All right. Karen in Kituit has sent us an email. She says, when is the best time to prune shrubs and trees? I haven't had a chance to do any gardening this year, but I'm hoping to get outside in the fall. Is it too late to prune in September or October? I have a small maple that planted itself in my yard several years ago, plus boxwood, yew, and juniper shrubs that need my attention.
Yeah. The it's really not a good time to do a lot of pruning in the fall, and that has to do more with how the plant responds to the wound. There's a mechanism in woody plants that causes callus to form and literally close off that wound, which is what a pruning cut is. And it helps to prevent decay organisms. In the fall, the wound response of woody plants is really slowed down. So there's a greater likelihood that perhaps a decay organism could get into that pruning cut. The other thing, depending on how early in the fall you are doing your pruning, sometimes pruning stimulates growth and can push out new growth that would then be winter killed. So even though you really want to do it now, I would probably wait till the spring.
Till spring. And then something like apple trees, you really want to prune those in early spring before they start.
You can do, you know, anytime after the new year, basically. So you can do dormant pruning in like January, February, and March if you're a hardy soul and want to be working in the garden.
Maybe there's a warm day or two, right?
You know, that's a great time. Commercial orchardists do their pruning usually in February and March. I'm looking out the window in February and March thinking about what I might want to do, but I'm not really out there doing it.
I'm with you on that one. Tom is calling from Dennis. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning. How you doing?
Good.
Question. We live in eastern Massachusetts, and we're on vacation down the Cape. We plant cucumbers every year, and what happens is they come up round and kind of pale. They almost look like little pumpkins, but, you know, we get them out of the bag and they're on a seed package and they're cucumbers. But it happens every single year.
Well, that's very bizarre. Are they green?
Yeah, a little bit green.
Huh.
100% green, though.
How do you water them?
The sprinkler system hits them, and then we water them regularly.
Okay, because cucumbers are 98% water, and they like the soil to be almost constantly not wet, but moist, damp. And if they run into periods where they dry out, they will become sort of malformed, swell up on one end and then shrivel down to nothing on the other end, and can sort of be roundish, but...
I actually have a couple of cucumbers like that. And Tom, I'll tell you what happened. There was a garden center closing for the season and they had some free vegetables. So
So
we grabbed a couple of those, planted them, but they were in a dry spot. They didn't get a lot of water. And then by the time I finally did get around to watering it on the end garden, they were these
round,
small little round things.
Yeah.
So for mine, I'm sure it was a lack of water.
Yeah, that's what I suspect it is. I actually planted a white cucumber this year, a white pickling cucumber that was sort of roundish, but it was white on the seed packet, too, so I expected that.
Well, there's, you know, Amy brought in some cucumbers that were round, the lemon cucumber
lime
cucumber,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Which are round, but they're supposed to be.
That's correct.
Tom, you didn't plant the round kind. You planted the regular elongated, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess we'd say try watering them a little more.
Yeah, make sure that of all your garden, maybe use a soaker hose and run it down the row where your cucumbers are and just turn it on and frequently and make sure that the soil stays moist and perhaps next year they'll look better.
Yeah, Tom, thanks for the call. You know, this year I just grow the cucumbers and let them go wherever they want, but I had a trellis this year, and boy, does that make a big difference.
Yeah.
I'm doing that from now on.
Yeah, I got a trellis from Gardener Supply Company. It's like a lean-to, and so the cucumbers just grow up the face of it, and then the cucumbers themselves sort of hang down.
And you can see them.
You can see them and pick them at the right stage. I meant to tell the caller that we were talking about cucumber beetles that you can use spinosad early in the season when your cucumbers are starting to vine, and it will control the cucumber beetle. And so you want to time your spray to when, if you look at cucumber flowers, they're closed first thing in the morning and they're also closed late in the day. And you would want to use the spinosad when the flowers are closed so you have the least impact on pollinators.
Yeah. And the other cucumber is growing up my asparagus.
Oh, for crying out loud. Very funny.
866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I think I mentioned last month that I was growing that scarlet runner bean because of the flowers. Mm-hmm. You know, it has a pretty red flowers.
Gorgeous.
And you mentioned they have these long green pods, bean pods. And I had read on the seed packet that they're very popular in Europe.
Yes.
And you had mentioned, oh, you can eat. I have since tried them and they are delicious. Yes. I was very surprised.
Yeah. Very meaty, mm-hmm, and very beany flavor. So you get sort of twofer,
yeah,
you know, you get the beautiful scarlet flowers. The hummingbirds love them. Butterflies are attracted to them. And then you get this wonderful meaty, it's sort of almost a flat bean, like a giant Romano type bean, but yeah, they're really delicious. And if you look at seed catalogs like Thompson and Morgan or some of the other British seed catalogs, they have them with white flowers. They have them with coral flowers. Mm. So you can do all sorts of beautiful things with them. I grew one. I'm not going to remember the name now, but I got the seed from Thompson and Morgan that had golden foliage. Cool. With the red flowers.
Oh, how interesting.
It was fabulous.
Well, it's fun, too, because, you know, the beans, some of them have gotten too big. You know, mm-hmm, you don't want it, they really are not so great.
They're compostable.
Yeah. But inside, the beans are red. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, they are.
Which my niece and nephew were just here, and they get the biggest kick out of that, yeah, wanting to try to eat the red bean.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I love to try different types of vegetables. That's why I grew the white pickling cucumber. I had never seen it before, and it was something different. So every year I try some vegetable that is not part of my regular vegetable repertoire. And it's just fun what you can discover, new tastes, mm-hmm, new textures.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. More after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Phyllis is calling from Wellfleet. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi there. So I'm a new vegetable gardener, and I have a couple of questions. It was very helpful to hear that since this is my first crop of tomatoes, the fact that they haven't ripened yet may be because it hasn't been warm enough. So that was very comforting.
Good.
Because the plants are very lush, full of fruit, but not much is turning red. I have never planted spinach or lettuce, and I love the idea of doing it. And you said I could do this soon, but I don't, because I have my first garden, my first boxed raised bed.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much room, and I wondered about planting the spinach or the lettuce between the tomato plants. In the earth between the tomato plants, or am I just going to be crowding everything out too much?
How far apart are your tomatoes spaced?
Probably not far enough. I'm so new to it that I just was throwing everything in the ground very quickly. So they're probably they're not even a foot apart.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I think there would not be enough room for you to put anything else there. But you could certainly, if you have big flower pots, you could grow some lettuce right now in flower pots. The spinach you could also grow in a flower pot. I'm not sure it would overwinter in a pot, but you could certainly get a crop for later in the fall.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fabulous. And does it matter if, because I've never done this before, does it matter if I start with seed or with a small plant?
Well, the lettuce germinates so quickly, you will have lettuce plants up within a week. The spinach might take a little bit longer, maybe 10 to 15 days to germinate, but it should be fine. Just use a bag of potting soil. Don't use garden soil. And put them in a very, very sunny area and keep them moist, and they should germinate quickly.
And Phyllis, if you get the loose leaf lettuce rather than the head lettuce, you can cut that. It'll grow back.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And one other quick question.
Sure.
You were talking about pruning, waiting until maybe right after the new year.
Yes.
And I was just getting ready to prune some lilacs, among other things. And I worried that if I waited until January, that what I would be doing is cutting off the blossoms that are starting to...
Well, you would. And if you pruned now, you would also be pruning off the flower buds. For the spring flowering shrubs, I recommend waiting until right after they bloom. So let the lilac bloom and then prune it immediately following bloom.
And should it be a very hard pruning, in other words, cut way back?
How old is your plant?
They're pretty, one of them is pretty old. I mean, I've been here at this place for 7 years, and it was here before I got here.
Yeah. You could do a hard pruning if you wanted to, but do it following, if you want them to bloom, do it following the bloom period. If you're just doing it to renovate, and you're willing to sacrifice the bloom, then you could do it earlier.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Phyllis, thanks for the call. Tom is calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, I've butternut squash and spaghetti squash, and the past several years I've had the problem with the fungus. But this year I started spraying early with copper.
Yes.
But I still got the fungus. Should I continue spraying with it? I mean, I do have squash.
Is that the powdery mildew you're talking about?
Yeah.
I would continue that on a weekly basis. How bad is the powdery mildew right now?
It's pretty bad. I mean, basically, you know, it started from the leaves at the beginning of a month ago.
Yeah.
I've been spraying it continuously, and it just sort of works its way, you know, out towards the outer edges.
Yeah. If it's already pretty bad, then maybe not. Next year, I would look at perhaps using a different material than copper, which is a good old-fashioned material for many diseases, but I don't think it's that efficient on powdery mildew. I think something like Actinivate, or there's another one. It's expensive, but it works really well. It's called Green Cure, and it's actually the active ingredient in it is potassium bicarbonate, which is baking soda. Mm-hmm. It tends to be a little more expensive than the Actinivate, which in itself isn't cheap, but it works exceptionally well on powdery mildew. So you might try that next year.
Yeah. Tom, good luck. Isn't it weird that something that's baking soda would be so expensive, right?
Well, the baking soda we use is not potassium bicarbonate. It's sodium bicarbonate. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why the potassium makes it more expensive. But,
but it does.
It works on a number of diseases, a black spot on rose, powdery mildew. It's got. You could use it on your tomatoes, but it is expensive.
Yeah. Barbara is calling from Brewster. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I called last month concerning my English ivy. And
oh, yes.
Someone, a wonderful woman, I called her, and she has tons of ivy. Unfortunately, I live in Brewster, and she lives all the way up near Falmouth.
Woods Hole,
Woods Hole, yeah. So it would be very difficult for me to get there. But I did plant a lot of ivy last...
Oh, Barbara, are you still there? Uh-oh. I think we lost Barbara.
I think we lost her.
All right, Barbara, give us a call back. I don't know if somehow she got her phone disconnected there. One of the other, we were talking a lot about vegetables here, but this also is a good time to start thinking about what spring flowers and bulbs that you might want be planting for the spring.
Yes. Well, now that my front yard is fenced in and the bunnies
hopefully
have not yet gotten in, I'm going to plant lilies. I just absolutely love lilies. The lily leaf beetle is much less of a problem in my yard than it used to be. And I just have this vision of Casablanca lilies growing in my garden. And I would have had them this year had the bunnies not eaten them down to the ground. Every time they popped up, the bunnies ate them. There is a massive explosion of bunnies this year.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
I walk around the block with my dogs in the morning, and we probably see half a dozen or more bunnies on our trip. And, of course, they're Jack Russells, and they've been trained, or not trained, they were bred.
In their genes.
yes, it's in their genes to go after small furry creatures, so walking them becomes an exercise, literally, in holding them back. I'm fenced in my entire front yard. For each of my raised beds, I used bamboo stakes and a rabbit fencing wire. And so each one of my raised beds at home is enclosed now. It's 24 inches high is the wire, and then the beds are 6 inches. So 30 inches high. And it's the only way I've been able to grow things this year.
So are you going to plant just Casablanca lilies, or are you going to plant
I think I'm going to do some, was it Stargazer?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is just lovely. I love lilies, the fragrance. That, and in August, I like the ones that bloom in August, the Orientals. Mm-hmm. They're just gorgeous. I just want them.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I've been lucky. I mean, I do have rabbits, but they don't seem to bother my lilies. But I have lilies that start blooming in June and bloom right on through the summer. You know, a whole bunch of different varieties. I just planted my Casablanca lilies last year, though. I had seen some on Nantucket that were, they had to be over 6 feet tall.
They were quite tall.
Mine were not, I did not get that tall this year. So maybe they'll get a little
next
bit taller
year.
Next year. Yeah.
You know, what's the old saying? The first year they sleep, second year they creep, third year they leap.
Yeah. Well, let's hope so.
Yes.
They say that about hydrangeas too.
Yes. What I'm really enjoying right now is there's sort of like a wild tiger lily, orange with reflexed petals.
I have some of those too.
Grows sort of on the edge of the woods, so partly shaded, and it still blooms beautifully. I'm also going to get some bulbs of those.
Yeah, nice. What about spring? Do you do daffodils and tulips and all
I
of that?
I don't do tulips because tulips...
you have to dig them up around here.
You have to either dig them up. They're not reliably perennial, and if I'm going to spend that much money and that much work on planting bulbs, I want to make sure they come back. I have been, over the past few years, increasingly putting in more and more different kinds of daffodils, double flowering ones, single ones, different colored, the little tiny dwarf ones.
I love those, yeah.
And they're just charming, and they come back every year. They're foolproof. The squirrels don't dig them up. One year I planted all these wonderful Thomasina crocus bulbs, and I think the squirrels got every single one of them, so we've eliminated that from our palette.
Right. And then the muscarias also.
The muscarias are beautiful, yes, and they're not dug up either. So anything the critters will not dig up, I'm in favor of. But generally your bulbs go in late September, October. You want the soil to be cooled off a little bit, although it's still fairly warm by then. But you can plant them pretty much up until the ground freezes. I know, and I've been guilty of this myself, people sometimes buy bulbs and never get them in and then wonder, can they plant them in spring? Well, you can, but they're not going to do anything. So if you buy bulbs,
get them out there.
And
a lot of people are tempted to plant their bulbs with bone meal, but that's like saying, hey, buffet over here.
Yeah, that is a guarantee that the squirrels will dig them up. So no bone meal. It's unnecessary. If you feel you need to add something to the soil, superphosphate will supply the same ingredient as bone meal. But I just plant mine. I don't fertilize them. I don't use bone meal. But plant them at the correct depth. You know, if it says 6 inches,
you want it to be 6 inches.
It needs to be 6 inches. Yeah. If it's less, if it's 4 inches or 3 inches, they peter out. They're not reliably perennial then.
And of course, this time of year, the garden centers have some pretty good sales going on, especially on the plants that have sort of like the bleeding hearts and the peonies that are past their prime and have no flowers.
Yes.
So you can get a pretty good deal. And if you're planting a peonies, you want to make sure you're planting it at the right depth, that it will flower.
Yes, the eyes, which are the buds, need to be no more than 2 inches below ground. And I've actually, when I've planted peonies, measured, when I'm planting them from a bare root. When I'm planting them from a plant that I get in a pot from a nursery, they're pretty much at the correct depth in the pot. So I make sure I plant that at the same depth in my garden. So I'm not burying them deeper.
Right. Now, we were talking earlier about pruning, and I was thinking of the rose bushes, which, you know, in the spring, you clip off the dead, and there's sometimes they get those little, I don't know what kind of critters get in there and
cane borers.
Bore through those holes. I put Elmer's glue on the edges. I wondered what you thought about that.
Well, I've heard of that. I'm not a rosarian. I have to have foolproof roses to do well. The fancy ones just...
Oh, yeah. I just have some climbing roses now. The rest of them have all, you know.
I have heard of that, and it seems to work. So I don't know if there's any validity to it or not, but anecdotally, I've had people swear by it. If there's a rosarian out there in the audience, they could tell us, yes.
And so there really isn't anything like that you can use, like we were talking about pruning some of the trees and things right now.
For pruning woody plants, generally you do not treat the cut surface. It used to be standard practice to put a quote-unquote wound paint on it, but research over the years has shown that it does nothing, and it might actually trap potential disease organisms underneath the wound paint. So the more important thing is that you make the correct kind of pruning cut. Flush cuts are not what you want to do. Mm-hmm. If you're pruning a limb off a tree, you'll see a swelling where the branch connects to the main trunk, and you make your cut in front of that swelling.
Gotcha. All right, Jane is giving us a call from Wellfleet. Hi, Jane.
Hi there. Amaryllis. I have amaryllis blooming outside now, and I'm not quite sure what to do with them.
Enjoy them.
they bloom at Christmas, and CL said throw a little fertilizer on and put them outside to summer camp, which I've done the last few summers, and they've never bloomed. And all of a sudden this year, they're blooming. So I don't know. They're beautiful. Yeah. They're under trees. But
they may not bloom at Christmas this year. They may now be on a new schedule. I can only attribute that to the cool temperatures. That's generally what triggers the flower bud formation in plants like an amaryllis. So it's probably has more to do with the cool weather than anything else. But if they're in bloom and they look lovely, definitely enjoy them.
Jane, I do the same thing. I bring my amaryllis out, and the ones that don't bloom, and they never bloom on Christmas for me. It's always after. But the ones that don't bloom in the winter usually do have some flowers in the summer.
Yeah.
So they like it under the trees.
Yes, they do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then there are multiple bulbs in the pot. Do I need to split them and stuff, or should I just leave them in that pot and bring it back in?
Yeah, amaryllis actually likes to be somewhat pot bound, and if you have multiple bulbs sitting in a pot, you'll get, when they do bloom, multiple flower shoots. Mm-hmm. So I would leave them.
Yeah, Jane, okay. Thanks for the call. Paula is calling from Woods Hole. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I wanted to ask you about the tiger lilies because you mentioned them.
Yes.
Because every year for me they grow up and then get eaten by a little red bug.
Oh, that's the lily leaf beetle.
Yeah. Totally. And I wanted to find out what I can do to get them to come back next year.
Yeah, they should come back naturally next year. But what I would suggest is when the foliage starts emerging from the ground in probably May, use a product containing spinosad and apply it weekly, and that will control the lily leaf beetle, and you should have lovely plants.
Oh. Yeah, and Paula, when you see them, they're
and the little black things on them, is that how they come back, or is it a bulb?
It's the bulb.
They just showed up. I never planted them.
Yeah, it's the bulb in the ground. Those little black things are called bulbils, and they eventually will form a bulb when they fall off the plant and are in the ground.
And Paula, when you're treating that and you see those red lily leaf beetles, you can just
squish them,
and then that'll help keep them under control.
And could you tell me again the name of that product?
It's any product that contains spinosad, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D. The most common one I see in the local garden centers is Cap'n Jack's.
Yeah, anything with spinosad. And then just finally, we only have about 20 seconds, but we want to make sure we're watering trees and rhododendrons as
until the ground freezes.
So that
Absolutely.
They make it through the winter.
That's right.
Because it's been a tough season for
them. It's been dry.
Very dry.
Yeah.
All right. Horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark joins us once a month. We've got one more show before we get into fall. So we'll see you next month, Roberta.
All right.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of WCAI, the local NPR station for the Cape, the Coast, and the Islands.